Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I've got very capable commissioners here. They're going to lead us through. We're going to start with the UI, and Boaz Serue is going to lead that discussion. And thereafter, with the compensation fund, we've got Sheikh Sumkonto is going to lead us in the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Member, for this opportunity to present our annual report. That is the structure of our presentation. The DG has already made the introduction, so I'll go straight to the issues, the key issues. The first one is the issues of governance. With regard to governance, Madam Chairperson, we are saying the year 2008 and 9 was another success in obtaining an unqualified opinion. That is the report from the Auditor General. This is the fourth time in succession from 2005 and 6 that we have received such a report. What makes this one also more important to us is that it is a clean audit report because it doesn't have qualifications and an emphasis of matter. On the second bullet, we're talking about the legislative compliance, and the DG has talked about the monthly police inspections and also making our inspectorate to be professional, and we believe we are going to benefit a great deal in that regard. We have worked very closely with the executive authorities, the minister, and the UIF board, which we actually explained how it operates in addressing the strategic intent and challenges that we face as a fund in terms of this current economic meltdown. But we're happy to say we've dealt with all those challenges, Chairperson. Despite the economic meltdown, the fund is able to weather the storm and pay close attention to the service delivery complaints that have been observed. We did have long queues. We did have more people coming to the labor centers compared to the year 2007 and 2008. It was around 100,000 more people, but we were able to deal with them and we were able to pay them. What is very important is the actuarial evaluation that was conducted on the end of March 2009 that indicated that the fund is in a sound financial position. This evaluation was done independently by the actuaries. Chairperson, issues of financial performance are in this particular manner. Despite the economic meltdown, the fund managed to collect 10.3 billion compared to 9.1 billion. And that increase is 13.5%. Also, in terms of our assets, we have increased our assets from 27.8 billion to 37 billion. That increase is a 33% increase. Also, with regard to our investment revenue, we increased it from 2.1 billion to 3.4 billion. That increase is 61.9%. Also, the bottom line, which is the surplus, has also increased from 6.8 billion to 9.8 billion. This Chairperson, increase in the financial performance is very important to us because what it means to the workers and the South Africans in general is that we do not have to go to government to ask for government to bail out, to bail the fund out because we maybe lack of funds. We also do not have to increase the contribution rate or the money that we collect from workers. It also gives us the opportunity to improve the quality of benefits that we offer to workers. I think that is very important. What we see on the slide 5 is just a summary of the performance. I've already talked to it. The issues of operational performance are very important in terms of our coverage. The fund has 1.2 million employers, commercial employers, the domestic workers and taxi operators which are registered on our database. However, Chairperson, we acknowledge the fact that with regard to the taxi industry, we are not making much progress because as you can see in the figure there in the taxi, we only have 5,516 taxi operators. We did report it previously when we were here, and you did raise your concern. I need to report the following things that we've put in place. The first one is that we have obtained the database of all taxi associations in the country, and we are waiting at this point in time for the detailed information of the taxi owners so that we can start to make the communication with them. We're expecting that information to be at our disposal by the end of this month. We have also focused our communication strategy to deal specifically with the taxi industry to be able to have them to register. Now, in terms of workers, we cover 7.6 workers throughout the country, the commercial, domestic, and the taxis, and the numbers are there as indicated. Now, operational performance, when we continue, Chairperson, we're seeing the rapid deterioration in global financial markets and an increase in unemployment in South Africa. So a growing demand for unemployment benefits. The funds paid an amount of 3.8 billion in benefits against the 2.9 billion last year. And if we do a quick calculation, it is 900 million more than what we expected. The fund received 627,244 claims, which is an increase of almost 100,000 more claims than in 2007 and 2008. Now, out of those claims that we received, Chairperson, a total of 610,736 of these claims were approved during this period, reflecting a 97% approval rate. The slide 9 deals with the breakdown of the benefits that we have paid. The unemployment benefits, which is the highest benefit that we pay, is 2.8 billion compared to last year, which is 2 billion. The increase is 800 million compared to the previous financial year. We also see that there has been an increase in the illness benefit, maternity, and we also see the dependent benefits also increasing. It's very important for us to look at the numbers that we deal with. In terms of slide 10, we are actually detailing the number of people who will be the customers that we were able to pay. In terms of unemployment, it's 474,793. Illness is 25,000. Maternity, 94. Dependents, 15. In total, we were able to deal with 610,000 beneficiaries, Chairperson. In terms of stakeholders' relations, we were indicating that as part of our stakeholder relations, the fund participated in 11 exhibitions across the country. Furthermore, it participated in 4 government imbizos, which were done with the Minister of Labor. We did this imbizos in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Free State, and also Gauteng. We also did what we call outside broadcast. We did one in Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and Gauteng. The aim of this imbizos is to inform the public, the employees, about their rights with regard to the benefits that are offered by the fund. The employers are also told about their obligations to pay and register their employees. We also have people's management in terms of head office. By the end of March 2009, the fund had 439 posts. 308 of those posts were filled, which is 87%. and the 59 was the vacancy rate. And the latest statistics that we received indicates that we only have 4 posts that we really need to fill. All other posts have been filled, and others, the interviews have taken place. In terms of employment equity, the statistics reflect that we have 59% of our staff being women, and 41% is males. The fund values its human capital and strives to continuously develop its staff. In 2008 and 2009, the fund continued to train and develop all staff. We trained officers on more than 30 training initiatives that are the courses. We took 9 officials into an ABET program. Also, 10 interns were placed on an internship program. This is only at head office. In terms of social security and retirement reform, Chairperson, we wish to report that we are playing a very important role in that debate, and our contribution has been in terms of the 3 papers that we have developed and some of the recommendations we have already implemented. One is a paper on wage subsidy, a paper on institutional arrangement on comprehensive social security, a paper on improvement of unemployment insurance system in South Africa. Now, by the end of this month, we will receive a report that will also deal with how the UIF can align itself to the broader social security and retirement reforms in government. Some of the initiatives, Chairperson, that we've done are in line with the research project that we did. The first one is also the foreign workers. The Minister of Labour has just issued the regulation where he's indicated that foreign workers will also be covered by the UI. The issue of excluding people with who do not have 13-digit barcode ID has been dealt away with. So if a foreign worker passes away, it means the beneficiary who does not have an ID will be able to access the benefits in the fund. The other aspect that we're looking at as a result of the research that we did is the improvement of benefits. The minister has already announced that he's going to improve the benefits, and it's based on the recommendations of the research. The third aspect was reintegrating workers into the labor market, which we also play a very important role in that regard. We also, as Chairperson, played a very important role in responding to the current economic meltdown as a fund. The first project that we embarked upon is that of training workers who are working here with the CITAS, the other government department. We have the Department of Infrastructure and Development, the Department of Housing and Local Government, who are working with us. What we are doing here, we are training workers also in conjunction with NSF on an artisan accelerated program. Some of the courses that we are covering is fitting and training, polar making, call center, and also helping people to upgrade on their driver's licenses from code 8, 10 to code 14. Now, these departments I've just mentioned, Chairperson, are already waiting to absorb these people that we are training into employment. I think the DG has talked more about the layoff. For us as a fund, it's a very important role that we have played to show that we don't only want to pay benefits, but we want to also to play a strategic role in alleviating the plight of workers in South Africa. We have contributed $1.2 billion to the project in dealing with this layoff. Chairperson, I think that has been covered. So we just indicate that we are actually playing a very important role in that regard. On the issues of audit, we just want to mention the following, that the fund obtained an unqualified audit opinion in 2008 and 2009. The management and the Office of the Auditor General had a workshop on the 20th and 21st of August 2009, where they have approved our management actions to address the issues that have been raised by the AG. We don't want to be complacent to say our report is clean. We also have a management letter that some issues have been raised, although they are not too worrying to that extent. But we believe that prevention is actually better than cure. Updates are done on a monthly basis, and the audit matrix is a subject matter for the audit committee and also the board. We are presenting this matrix, which is an action plan, to the audit committee and the board. The Auditor General has indicated that during this financial year, he's going to do the interim audit, which will start in November. We also involved in the verification of the actions by management in dealing with the issues that are raised by the Auditor General, and that is done by our risk management unit and also the audit matters meeting that the DG has alluded to. We believe that there is substantial progress on implementation of the actions. Chairperson, the improvement of benefits, we say the internal processes have started to amend the legislation, that is the Unemployment Insurance Act, to improve the benefits. It is envisaged that the internal process will be finalized before the end of this financial year, which is March, and the next financial year, the process of consultation with NEDLAC and other parliamentary processes will start. The intention here is also to give the minister the power to improve benefits, because at this point in time, the process is a bit long because it has to go through the parliamentary processes. Although we don't say that is not fine, but we believe that if, for instance, the minister wants to improve benefits, the turnaround time can be much quicker if he can do it with the Minister of Finance. These are the strategic objectives for the year 2009 and 10, and our strategic objectives have been linked to the strategic priorities of government as a whole. The first one is speeding up economic growth and transforming the economy to create decent sustainable livelihoods. As a fund, we see the strategic goal number one to support that priority will be to reintegrate unemployed workers into the labor market. The fund will train unemployed contributors to prepare them to re-enter the market. We did the pilot program, and we believe it's successful. We can continue with in that regard. The strategic goal number two is assist in job creation. The fund will invest about 5% of its total portfolio in projects that have employment creation as an objective. It means the 40 billion assets that we have, 5% of that will be utilized for social responsible investment, which would be investments which have a major component in the creation of jobs. In terms of building cohesive, caring, and sustainable economy, the strategic goal is supported by strategic goal number three, which is to restructure the UIF benefits and coverage. The fund will, in conjunction with social partners, amend legislation to improve both the benefits in terms of the income replacement and also the period of benefits, and also coverage. The coverage here, Chairperson, which also comes from the research, is that we need to look at people who are self-employed. We need to look at people who are public servants, because they are excluded at this point in time, to also include them. The fund will investigate the increase of benefits days from 2038 to 365, which is from 8 months to 12 months. That is the number of months where we pay our benefits. Intensify the fight against crime and corruption. Strategic goal number four is to combat the scourge of fraud and corruption. The fund will revise both the fraud prevention strategy as well as the risk management strategy to ensure that fraud is prevented. I just need to mention some few points here, Chairperson, to say already we are using electronic systems just to analyze our database, to look at the benefits and look at the trend to say who are we paying and are we paying correctly. The second aspect is to partner with the Special Investigation Unit to accelerate the issues of investigation and also prosecution where, for instance, we find that people have have actually passed through fraudulent transactions or defrauded the funds. We also want to contribute in building a developmental state, including improvement of public service and strengthening of democratic institutions. That is supported by strategic goal number 5, improve capacity and efficacy of the fund. The fund will endeavor to close the skills gap, reduce vacancy rate to 3%, and ensure that all officials sign performance agreements and they are assessed twice annually. We will also want to increase the compliance by employers. We will also clean our database to ensure that it is up to date. We want also to decentralization of claims processing. A capability will also take priority. We already now have 57 processing points, which are labor centers which can take claims and approve and pay. But we want to decentralize to all 125 labor centers. We also want to reduce paperwork by scanning all registration and claims documents. We also want to increase the number of registered claim taxi operators. We also want to do what we call a virtual office to extend claims processing functions to certain employers. We indicated that we want to give this functionality to some employers where they can process and pay sick benefits and also maternity benefits. Strategic goal number 7, it talks about our revenue inflows. We want to increase revenue inflows by consumer price index and also increase the overpayment recovery rate, which we call a work and draw. Strategic goal number 8, we talk about communicating with our customers. We will improve customer awareness and satisfaction through the development and implementation of a communication plan. In conclusion, Chairperson, the fund has appreciated the tenable successes and acknowledged some of the challenges facing the organization, and we continue our strides to address these challenges. The current economic recession poses a service delivery challenge to the fund, and in terms of claims turnaround time, we are putting capacity to address the demand. I think in the slide which was presented by the department, there were 363 posts which were approved by the minister to help us to deal with these particular challenges. We also created the balance of models to cover for the both and the good, both the good and the bad economic conditions. But lastly, we think we have adequate reserves at our disposal to deal with the number of high retrenchment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, sir. Can we take members that two presentations? Can you take them both and then ask the questions later? Compensation fund, please.
Thank you, Honourable Members and the Chairperson. I was just indicating that following from the Director General, I think you had access to the annual report of the Compensation Fund. In general, the annual report confirmed what I presented earlier before yourselves in June. At that point in time, one was already aware what the outcomes, for example, of the Auditor General will contain, and I think the AG's report is contained on page 44 up to the end of the report. So that will be the areas where the AG has made his findings, and the critical areas where he has given us an adverse report relates to the area of revenue management, claims expenditure, issues around the management of internal controls, and I think also they've highlighted in a number of areas the issue of the capacity within the compensation fund to be able to deal with some of the compliance requirements of the legislation, that is the Public Finance Management Act and the Compensation Act itself. So basically, I will take you through the presentation, which basically gives you the mandate of the Compensation Fund, which is basically a public entity within the Department of Labor, which is responsible for the administration of compensation for occupational diseases and injuries. It's administered by Act number 130 of 1993, as amended in 1997. The background basically provides for the compensation for disablement caused by occupational injuries and diseases sustained or contracted by workers, or for the death resulting from such injuries. The fund is financed from levies paid by employers, and then the revenue consists mainly of the annual assessments paid by registered employers on a basis of a percentage or fixed rate of annual earnings of workers. Next slide. I think this is basically the structure of the fund. However, given our presentation in June, we were requested to come up with the strategic interventions to anticipate those issues that the AG was going to raise and begin to put a plan in place to address those issues. Basically, what we have done, we've identified the focus areas which we needed to address for us to be able to begin to turn around the compensation fund to a fund, hopefully, at the next presentation when I'm here, you'll be getting better news than you obtained in around June last year, this year when I came to make a presentation. The critical area that we believe that we must address is the issue of the internal control environment. Basically here, the AG requires us to put in place measures to be able to predict our revenue and also to be able to account on a weekly, daily basis, and also to put in place measures to ensure that we minimize any losses that the fund might experience through fraud and corruption. We have also identified that one of the issues that we also need to look into is to look at the production of monthly financial statements, because as we're speaking at the point in time when I was here in June, this area was quite a difficult area. We're not able to get monthly financial statements produced. So this is one of the key areas that will indicate that we are beginning to manage the fund better. The other issues were issues relating to compliance with legislation, treasury regulations, Public Finance Management Act, and the Compensation Act itself. The other area that we believe we need to address is the re-engineering of the business process of the compensation fund for us to be able to pay benefits faster and also to be able to eliminate room for fraud and corruption. So the last area that we also wanted to look at was the area of improving governance, which I believe forms the foundation of any organization that wants to manage its affairs better. Because if governance lacks, then there is room for fraud, corruption, and non-performance. So we believe that we need to put in place structures that will ensure us that we are able to account on a regular basis and eliminate opportunities for non-performance and fraud and corruption. One of the areas that I've committed to the portfolio committee was that I need to begin to capacitate the finance area, which was one of the critical areas that led us to the audit qualifications that we've got. We have indicated that the critical thing, we are going to make sure that by the 31st of March, the finance area will be well capacitated. And I've distributed a matrix of those action plans with target dates. And Madam Chairperson, I am happy to report to you that, as I promised, that by October I would have appointed a CFO. I want to inform you, with other members, that that has since happened. We have now a CFO which commenced work on the 5th of October, Ms. Feza Kapuzi, who's here. And she's got a very good history. I have recruited her whilst I was in the UIF from CCMA. She was running the CCMA finances, and she has contributed to the turnaround that UIF is boasting about. And subsequently, she was deployed to the National Skills Fund, which at the time had a disclaimer similar to the situation I am. She's turned it around to an unqualified status last year. So I hope the experience that she'll bring to the compensation fund will assist us in addressing the current challenges in the finance area. I wish her all the best. I hope that next year when I come here, she'll be able to give a good report in this particular area. We have also filled 10 manager posts. In finance and other related areas to be able to begin to address this area. What I've also done, Madam Chairperson, time is not on our side. As the AG was giving us the report at the end of July, you'll have been aware that by that time we're already 2 months into, or 4 months into a new financial year. So I was of the view that with the new people arriving, it would not be possible for us to be able to win this war. So what I've done, I've requested the assistant of the accounting officer, the DG, to allow me to appoint a service provider who can come on board and assist us. So I'm pleased to announce that KPMG was appointed on the 1st of October to provide additional capacity and expert assistance to the fund in order to address the AG findings that we've got. So basically what we're saying is that we're throwing money to the problem in order to address it much faster, because time is not on our side. The second area that was highlighted by the AG was the issue of the bank reconciliations and the suspense accounts. What was basically happening is that on a monthly basis, on the amount that we're collecting, every year, those contributions that we could not locate the owners of, they were put into suspense accounts, meaning that we were battling to find out as to where this money came from. So what we have basically done now, we have begun to address that issue. The AG reported that was an amount of 87 million that was sitting in suspense accounts. And I must be able to indicate to you that to date, we are making progress in that area. I've managed to get the cooperation of our banker, APSA, to assist us in clearing all those unallocated contributions. And I hope that probably by the end of the year, we should have resolved that particular area. We have also introduced month-end procedures, which are critical for us to be able to produce financial statements. Without these procedures, will not be able to do that. So those things are in place and are being monitored on a regular basis. The finance team is making sure that on a monthly basis we close our books for us to be able to produce the financial reports for that particular month. Another area that I've focused on was the issue of bank reconciliation, which I'm told now that have been currently produced on a weekly basis. and are signed off by the executive manager. We also had an issue where the AG has identified that there's been debtors with credit balances. To date, we can report that we are in the process of clearing those debtors with credit balances. We have already cleared 23 million as of the 30th of September. 15 million is under review, and 48,000 rand. It's an amount that has to be refunded to the employers who qualify to get the refunds. We also found lacking on the issue of the fixed asset register. In this particular space, the challenge was that we had a policy that says that we review our assets on a three-year cycle. But unfortunately, last year the fund performed an asset count. And the AG was of the view that because of the recession, we should have re-evaluated our buildings and properties. So we were qualified because we didn't re-evaluate our properties because they were saying that because of the recession, the properties might have lost a significant amount in value. So in terms of the accounting requirements, we ought to have done that. So it's something that we took note of and we're busy addressing it and ensuring that the asset register is kept up to date. The other issue was the amount of 844 million that were set aside for refunds to employers who have shown a good performance in a three-year cycle where we have not received any accidents or claims submitted by those employers. In terms of the legislation, the DG may provide rebates, merit rebates to those employers in order to encourage them to manage their health and safety better. So we are saying basically in this particular area, 578 million has been provided, and we will be able to pay that money once we have finalized the policy. The challenge has been that we didn't have a policy on how to effect those payments. And we are finalizing that, and I believe that before the end of the year, we should have resolved this matter and refunded those employers in terms of the merit rebates. In terms of legislation, we are anticipating to introduce policies to enforce COIDA, and also we're looking to introduce policy to enforce COIDA, which we are working very close with the Department of Labor's Inspection Services to assist us in ensuring that employers come to the table in this particular area. And we are also going to revise the minimum earnings for total temporary disablement and also to increase the compensation benefits during this current financial year. I may indicate that as of yesterday, the Benefit Committee has met to look particularly at this particular area to determine the new benefit structure for the new financial year 2010 going forward. We are also in the process of finalizing the computer programming for our financial system, and we are hoping that by the 1st of April next year, we should be able to have a new financial system. And we are also working on a project to improve the payment of our benefits through the EFT system. You recall that in June that I indicated to you that sometimes in 2007 we did away with checks, which were a major portion of the payment that we're doing. And today I can report to you that that method of payment is no longer there. What we're basically doing now is basically bringing more efficiencies in to ensure that money gets to the real owners much faster. The next area that we're looking at is to improve payment of service providers. And I think the target there, we are looking at 30 days. Currently, as we speak, I'm told that this particular objective has been achieved. But my experience in the past is that it used to take about 3 to 4 months to pay the ordinary service providers. However, in the area of medical payment, this particular objective has not been achieved, and we are now putting in place a new computer system to process our claims differently for us to be able to meet the 30 days requirement. In terms of the IFRAS compliance, which is one of the areas that the AG has qualified us in, that we're not in compliance with the International Financial Reporting Standards, and we have now put in place a process to ensure that on a monthly basis we are compliant with IFRAS, and the service providers who we have appointed will be looking at this particular area to assist us that we achieve that. The other area that the AG found us wanting was in the area of supplying him with documentation timeously for them to be able to perform the audit. We had a serious backlog in the area of document management, to the extent that the AG wants you to give them documents within 5 days. If you're not able to give them any information within 5 days, they deem that as a limitation of scope, and then you get qualified for that. So basically, we're putting in place a process here together with Siemens to ensure that we address this issue. And to date, I can indicate that internally we've put in mechanisms using overtime to try to address this issue. And as of last Friday, I was told that we are now sitting in the region of about 1.2 million backlog compared to 6.5 million during the audit period. So which means that if we put much more effort, this area also might soon become resolved. We are, as I've indicated earlier on, that we are busy in discussion with Siemens to put in place measures to ensure that we avoid these backlogs as we move on, that we process and scan all the documents faster to ensure that we don't have backlog. On the, I've dealt with this one already on the financial side. On the claim side, I've also indicated that we are now putting a new claims management system in order for us to be able to process claims much faster. And I will assure Honorable Member Lowe that in the months to come, you will begin post-April. Some of these issues will be resolved in a sense that we will be able to account for each and every claim that has come in through the system to determine the status in which it is. Currently, it is not possible for us to account. For example, if you submit a complaint to the compensation fund, we have about four systems that we have to go through, different systems that we have to go through to try to determine the status of that claim. The system cannot give you the status of a claim. People have to go and look at different systems for them to be able to make it a judgment as to what is the status of this claim. And unfortunately, that is not acceptable. We have decided that we are no longer going to focus on current systems. We need to begin to move into a new area. And I can report to you, Madam Chairperson, that I have, through the assistance of the then acting DG, procured on a pilot basis a system from Rand Mutual Assurance, which is an institution that is managing compensation for occupational injuries in the mining area. And they are operating under license from the compensation fund. And we have decided that we should use their system because we don't want to reinvent the wheel. So we are now at a stage of proof of concept. And we hope that by the beginning of January, we'll have dealt with the proof of concept and made the necessary adjustments that we want to make to suit our own environment. Once that is being done, between January and April and March, we intend to pilot the system. We'll identify particular providers in the medical industry, hospitals, and medical service providers to pilot and see whether we are in the right direction. And in that 3 months, we intend to make the necessary corrections with the hope that from the 1st of April 2010, we'll roll out the system throughout the country, meaning that each and every service provider will be able to submit accounts electronically. Only those who do not have systems to submit information will submit their stuff through the manual process, and we will be ready to receive those claims manually through the new processing centers that we are rolling out also in the provinces, meaning that compensation fund will now be decentralized to be available to the service providers and workers across the country. And we hope that next year when we come here, we'll be giving you progress as to where we are in terms of the rollout of the new claim system and the rollout also of the processing centers of the compensation fund. I have met with the CEO of Siemens post the DG's meeting, and he has given us assurance that he will support us in this particular area to ensure that we achieve this objective. So this is one of the things that we believe it will make us either rise or break. But I think it's something that we all put our efforts together to make sure that we get to that stage where we'll no longer be talking about backlogs of paper, where we'll be saying that we are now paying people much faster. I did also indicate that we are decentralizing to the four provinces. Madam Chairperson, I can indicate that from the 1st of July, our first decentralized processing center in Limpopo was launched and is up and running. And I must indicate that from experience, those service providers who were negative have since sent me positive emails to indicate that the direction we have taken is the right direction. And I'm assured that by March next year, KwaZulu-Natal, Free State, and the Eastern Cape will have fully-fledged processing centers. And currently what we are doing, we are training and recruiting staff to be able to be deployed to these four areas. And in the year 2010-11, we'll be rolling out to the remainder of the country. So I believe that in the 2011 financial year, we'll be finishing the mission to decentralize the compensation fund. This objective, Madam Chairperson, to inform you, the decentralization of the compensation fund was decided in 1999 by the Department of Labor. And I can indicate that today is 2009, and we are only there in the programs. I want to assure you that under my leadership, this will happen. And I've already started in Limpopo, and by March next year, it will be in the four provinces. And we believe that 2010-11, the whole country will be able to process claims anywhere in the country. On the other area, the main objective there is to improve governance and eliminate fraud and corruption. Madam Chairperson, I did indicate last time that one of the reasons why we're having credit balances in the debtor's book is because of the current modeling in the legislation of the way employers are contributing. And I've indicated that most employers are manipulating the current system of premium determination because it's risk-based. And also it's industry-based. For example, if you are in the high-risk industry, your premium is high. So what happens from time to time, once they've submitted their, assessment, and then we have sent them back an invoice to say, this is what we think we should pay. Later on, they come back and say, but no, I made a mistake. I don't belong to that industry. I'm in another industry. So that in itself causes a lot of problem. And what we have also picked up is that some of our officials are assisting them to reduce the assessment and in return for something else. So what we have done in this particular area, I've solicited the assistance of Alexander Forbes to develop a new modeling for the premium system, and it will be based on a simple insurance principle of saying that your behavior will determine what you pay. If you do not manage your health and safety well, you will pay more. But if you manage it well and do better, then you will pay less. So basically what we are doing now, we are at a stage where we have completed the modeling. What we are now doing, I've requested them to do what we call a sensitivity analysis as to whether the modeling that we have in place, is it financially viable? So that we don't want to introduce something that will bankrupt the fund. So we are assured that by the end of November, that modeling, sensitivity modeling will be done and we'll be able to know. And in 2011, April, because of the process of negotiation, which we anticipate that might have to take place in NEDLAC, we are not comfortable about introducing it next year. So what we are basically saying that during the period 2010-11, we'll be profiling this new modeling, negotiating, and trying to win over the stakeholders to this new direction. The next area, Madam Chairperson, is the review and the rollout of the risk management strategy. I must indicate that what we had in this particular area was non-capacity in that particular area where I have only one official at the rank of senior constable who was running the risk management area. And what we have done is to assist him to manage this area better. We have procured what is called a body shop where we've got Ernst & Young, PKF, and Quinana risk solutions to assist that area. And I must indicate, Madam Chairperson, that I'm beginning to see the fruits. You will be able to read soon in the newspapers the results of one of these actions where we have now discovered a lot of fraud that is happening in the fund. and suspensions will happen during the course of this month, hopefully. And the former Scorpions, which is now Hawks, have come on board and they've completed their investigation and they are ready to arrest. So we have quite a number of medical providers who will be affected by this exercise and finding. And we believe it will start to deter those who might want to play in this particular area. So I must assure you that in the governance area, we have begun to strengthen this particular area and have also strengthened the internal audit function. The minister has approved the new structure of internal audit, which I'm now currently recruiting in order to fill that structure. We are now at a point where we have interviewed the candidates that had applied for the internal audit function. Unfortunately, we couldn't find one among those who have applied. So the audit committee has advised that we should now headhunt. So we're in the process of headhunting the head of internal audit. But in the meantime, I've got Gobodo and Deloitte who are assisting me in managing that area on a caretaker basis until I've appointed my full complement of staff to take over from the service provider. In this particular area, I also dealt with the debtors. We indicated last time that we have a serious backlog in terms of collecting monies from those employers who have not paid, and we are currently in the process of finalizing the selection of a service provider to assist us in collecting that. And the finance team has assured me that by November 2009, we will be having a debt collector in our midst to assist us manage that area well. On the performance information, Madam Chairperson, to push on time, you'll notice that on our claim site, you'll notice that between 2007 and 2008 and 2009, the claims number have slightly come down. And one of the reasons could be the processing of these things, because this is done manually. And we've also seen that because of the lower number of claims that have been processed, there's been quite a smaller number of repudiation. And what we have done, we have paid over 140,000 claims compared to 159,000 in the previous year. To date, in the 6 months that we are, we're almost halfway with last year's figures. So the indication is that 2009 and 10, we'll be likely to process almost around 200,000 claims this current financial year. The next slide basically deals with the graphical representation of those. Can we move to the next? The same year shows that the compensation benefits are on the rise. You could see that we have paid almost more than 171,655 benefits during the 2009 compared to 168,000 in 2008. Medical payments also, I think basically here the rise is due to inflationary pressures, because for the first time in 2009-10 we advertised new tariffs. In the last year we didn't increase our tariffs. That's why you see that the medical benefits were not as high as they are this year. So we have made an increase in tariffs, and I think that is contributing to the increase in the number of medical payments that we are making. The next slide there shows basically that despite all the problems that I've mentioned, there is good performance that we can report. You'll notice that our revenue has increased by almost 1.2 billion from compared to the previous year, and our investment income has also increased by over 700 million. Other income has also increased by 6 million. Benefits paid, you'll notice that we 2007 and 8 we paid 1.2 billion, and 2009 we paid 2.9 billion. The first time compared to last year, we've made a surplus of 1.1 billion in the last financial year, compared to a deficit of 714 million. This was due to the adjustments in the provisions. In 2007 and 8, the actuaries decided that we should increase our provisions to 4.2 billion, and which contributed to the deficit that we had in the previous year. And I think they've readjusted them now this year to 2 billion, and this has also contributed to the profit that we have made. The next slide basically shows you the investment performance. There we've seen a rise of 3 billion in our investment performance. On the asset side, we've seen a decline that is due to depreciation. On the receivables, we've seen a reduction there to 821 million. And our cash has increased to 655 million. Madam Chairperson, next slide there. I want to indicate that last year you did request me to follow up on this amount, the 400 million that was unpaid to beneficiaries and service providers. I just want to clarify that it's not only to beneficiaries. Some of it relates to beneficiaries. And I did indicate that these were the checks that were due to be distributed out for payment. And because of the actions we took to stop the checks, despite the fact that you instructed me to follow up and put campaigns to try to get these people to collect it, there is a gazette that we issued, also Government Gazette number 529, which was published this year on the 3rd of July, requesting everyone who might believe that they have money that are due to them from the compensation fund. I must say that I'm not getting any joy. And the implication might be that maybe this money should not have been paid. But we will still continue to put campaigns out there to make people aware that there is this amount of money that is due to them and the service providers. My sense is that having looked at the data of this current service provider that might soon be arrested, who has defrauded us over 12 million rand, my sense is that most of them will not be able to come, because as soon as they come, we'll want to follow up more, and they might end up in the hands of the law enforcement agencies. So my sense is that maybe this is the money that was not due to anyone that must be retaining the fund. And the question is, what could have happened in the previous year? I'm not able to ascertain that. But the fact is, if indeed this was a problem, we'll begin to address it and stop the problem. With that, Madam Chairperson, honorable members, I want to thank you.
Thank you, sir. And thank you both of the entities, UIF and Compensation Fund, for comprehensive presentations, reports. Now it's up to members to ask questions. Sure. One, in that order, Honorable Ollis, Low, Madisha, Makubela, Nyekemba, Tikeleti.
again. Thank you. All right. Madam Chair, all my questions are for the compensation fund. With apologies to the Commissioner. I'm sure he won't take it personally. It's just issues. On page 12, progress, the fund endeavors to make all payments within the prescribed 30 days after receipt of an invoice. However, this is currently not being 100% achieved. Well, that kind of is one of those sentences, Madam Chair, that hides, you know, a lot of labor brokers could even hide the others. So why is the sentence? So there must be lots of flaws in here. I want to know how much is not being achieved. Is it 10% or 90%? Or, I mean, there's lots of, looks like lots of drama in there. Let me stick to three quick questions and then I'll pass on to the others because I'm sure they've got questions. It seems to me like every time in the Department of Labor there's a problem, the name Siemens seems to come up in the discussion somewhere along the line. Now, what I understand from what you said a moment ago is that the Rand Mutual Insurance System is a very good one and it works and you're going to adopt it. Are we saying that the Siemens system was not able to do what you really need and now we've found a system that can do it that we are going to bring in because the other one is not doing what you need it to do? Because that's what it sounds to me. It sounds like Siemens can't give you up-to-date details of these claims, and so you battle to give answers to the public. But this new system, the Rand Mutual can, which means the Siemens one for the compensation fund is not working. It sounds like that. I'll just flip over some of these that are less important. I want to know from the Labor Department, not from the compensation fund per se, on page 19, there's a high staff turnaround in the Department of Labor's internal audit section, which has now resulted in problems for the compensation fund. I'm trying to find out why there's such a high staff turnaround in that department within Labor. And then I think I've just got one more question. Actually, yeah, one question and one statement. Page 22, the figures don't add up. I don't quite understand that page because claims received, 20,000, for example, claims accepted, 18,000, claims repudiated should be the difference. So claims accepted and claims repudiated, if you add those two numbers, it should come to 209,830, but it doesn't. So clearly I'm misunderstanding something. And then the payments are not the same as the claims accepted. So we accept 182,000, but we only pay 159,000. Where do the others go to? It's page 22. You know, the columns don't add up. There's a discrepancy there in the columns. It should, in my view, it should total, but doesn't total. And then my last statement is this 400 million, is there not a possibility that there's also fraud inside the department? In other words, some of that 400 million might be staff have created fake claims so they can pocket the money themselves, but because they've now been blocked with all this new system, they can't get the money out of the system. So there is no, let's say it's Mr. Mkhize, and so the check gets written for Mr. Mkhize, but there is no Mr. Mkhize. It's somebody in the staff who's created this fake person, Mr. Mkhize, so he can get the check out. It might not be external people only. It might also be internal staff who's stealing money. That's all I have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My colleague actually touched on quite a number of these things, and I don't want to repeat most of them. However, I would just like to emphasize on the last one. In June, Commissioner Mkonda, when you were here, this 400 million was there. It's still here. And what concerns me, though, you and I both know the number of queries that's leveling to your office regarding many of these claims and queries of people. Am I correct if I surmise that now that you're putting systems in place, all of a sudden, many of these recipients, it seems to me, and I surmise, they have disappeared. My question to you then is, prior to this, obviously, claims were lodged. Am I correct if I then surmise that many of these claims that have been paid to the different service providers as well as the recipients, the possibility or rather probability of fraud could have been evident regarding that, and how are you going to address that and by when? The next thing is, I'm a little bit worried that Alexander Forbes, Rand Merchant Insurance, KPMG, Gobodo, Deloitte and Touche, and others, they are all service providers, and obviously these people, there's a premium attached to it. Can you tell us what is the premiums attached to all these service providers, and at what stage are you going to cut yourself loose from these people by capacitating your department with the necessary expertise? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Law, Honorable Matisa.
Mopedia, all these things. No, thanks. Thanks, Chair. Just a few questions. UIF. You see, we can be proud that and celebrate, of course, that there is always a surplus. We may sound like a broken record, but in the last hearing that we had here, it was indicated that 9.2 billion was there as a surplus. And of course, promises were made by you that you would go into this thing and handle this. And you are coming back again to say, we have this problem. I think we need to talk about that. Let's hear what you've got to say. Linked to that, you are indicating that there is an approval rate. Now, an approval rate vis-a-vis a payment rate, you know, these are two different things. We can here be proud that there have been approvals. We can be proud if you rise and say there has been movement in terms of people being paid. Now, on page 14 of your report, you indicate that you have contributed to the companies in distress. I think that's quite important that you explain this. Number one, to say, how are these companies selected? And for you to simply rise and say it is a company in distress, how are you going around to select these companies? Where are they? And from our experience, we can rise and with authority say that we know where some of the companies in distress are. And if you come here, for example, in the Cape, we know that there are companies which are collapsing, particularly those which are in clothing and textiles, etc. In the fisheries, we're just giving those as an example. But there are many others. So one would like to know how you have these companies selected, where are they, and who works with you, really. Are you simply, as the fund rising and saying this is a company in distress, or do you go out and work with the other institutions which you're supposed to work with the unions, etc., etc.? If you can say something around that. And with the compensation fund, I think we can say that, and I have this file before me here, and looking into each and every point which you refer to as the future plans of the fund, yes, we can rise and say, yes, we're able to see that in line with your promises, something has been done or is being done. But what one is not happy about, unless, of course, you proceed to have this explained, is this the first point that my colleagues here have raised, really, of the monies that have not been claimed. Now, the last point of your future plan, you know, the one that you presented in the last meeting, you talked there of the intensification of communication with stakeholders. One would rise and say, of course, I see here, it's page 28, of course, we talk about that 400 million, which I must say is a problem. But then somewhere, of course, we talk about your intention to go out and ensure that the ordinary people out there are able to understand this. It's what you went out to promise to this committee. They're once again promising that this will happen. But further, you are indicating there that, you know, this was taken to, rather published in the Government Gazette, etc. Of course, that will be a good thing for these people who are here and in the Parliament, etc. But the ordinary workers and the ordinary people who are out there, the working class and the poor, as we say, don't read the Government Gazette. Of course, in my own village, of course, they will listen to the radio and so on. What is it that you are doing beyond that? Because like I'm saying, you spoke of the intensification of communication in the last meeting, but it is still indicated that not enough has been done. And you promised, said that when you come to this meeting, enough would have been done, really. Perhaps you need to explain what the problems are so that we can move from that particular position. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matisha, Honorable Makumbela. Thanks, Madam Chair. My question is directed to the UIF. I want to know what are the penalties for non-compliance by employers. And from that note, I want to know, because you have mentioned that you had imbezzled or drive to inform employers of their obligations and employees of what are their benefits. But you are still having challenges in the taxi industry. The last time you came here, you told us that you are still having many challenges in getting the employers in the taxi industry to register and to pay for UIF for their employees. I want to know what are the penalties and towards non-compliance, and if so, what is the program that you have in place that will specifically be directed to the taxi industries, as they are also employers who employ a large number of our people down there, but they do not comply with the UIF benefits. That is the first and the last question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you very much. I
and it relates to the question that has been raised by Honorable Mark Kubel on the issue of the taxi industry. This question, I refer this question both to UIF and Compensation Fund, because in the report of the UIF, you are indicating that other taxis have registered with the UIF, but you are encouraging others to come to the party. I understand that the taxi industry also falls under the transport department. Are there challenges that you are confronted with at the Department of Labor with regards to registration of taxi with UIF? Challenges that because that's not necessarily your industry, but it's an industry that belongs to another department. Are there challenges which make you not to cover the maximum number that you wanted to cover in registration? I think linked to that, to compensation, compensation, COIDA, let me speak COIDA, is this not supposed also to cover the taxi industry? If not, why? Are they not regarded as employers? Or maybe you can explain for our understanding as to how do you determine that this employer is supposed to be covered by COIDA. The other issue is on UIF, trading of unemployed. I've noted that there's 40 million. I'm not sure what is 400 or 40, but I think it's 40. I've seen 40 in the slide. I haven't seen 400. Where this project has already started in Gauteng South and North. Just for clarity to me, Madam Chair, the training that I'm aware of in Gauteng, in particular, is not all sitters. I think you are saying this also is done in conjunction with the sitters, I assume. If not, then you will clarify me. But the only sitter that I'm aware of has kickstarted this project is Maseta. I haven't heard of other sitters in both Gauteng South and Gauteng North. But in your presentation, you didn't clearly indicate which sitter came to the party on this one. On compensation, you see, I was saying to Honorable Shady next to me that, wow, what a good CV of the new CFO that he had employed. I think it will yield expected results. But I must link this to what Honorable Law raised with regard to service providers. Because in your presentation, you are talking of short-term, medium-term, with no specific time frames as to when, for argument's sake, KPMG will provide services to you in order to address the problems that you have for how long. That's my problem. I think his point of, the fees that are paid I'm linking that and also the capacitation of staff that you have in the department as a way of skills transfer from those service providers. I think because I'm raising this because to me it's that is equal to labor broking in a way. That's equal to labor broking because instead of you going to employ, you ask somebody to provide you with a service and pay that person. You get my point? Good. The other point, Madam Chair, is around there's that reduction from 6.5 to 1.2. I can't remember in which slide. But my worry on that, I'm not worried about the figure. I'm worried about the statement that you have made to say that you have been told. My problem is that in most of the positive things that you have been reporting on, you keep on saying, as I have been told, as I have been told, as I have been told. Because my experience is that, if I can share this experience with you, in the area where I'm staying, it used to be Ward 6 in 1995. In 2000, it was Ward 31. From 2006, now it's Ward 64. We have all the councillors in this term were always been told that a particular informal settlement is problematic, so therefore there can be no development. Up until during the time of our research, that's when we discovered that there has been no feasibility study conducted there. Thus, imagine with the so-called protest, deliberate protest marches, if that councillor, his home was burnt down on the basis of what he has been told. So I'm worried because you are told, Then when you come here next year, you won't tell us that, no, they told you lies. We will hold you accountable. I think let me... One last point to UIF on the registration of the taxis. I think you mean taxi drivers. That means the taxi owners must register as employers in order for them to contribute and also deduct from the drivers who are employed by the taxi owners. There are in most taxi ranks, you'll find that people who are responsible to clean the taxi ranks, where do you put those? In the taxi industry itself, you'll find patrollers, queue marshals, and all those. That registration that you reported on, does that include even those categories? Thank you very much, sir.
Just before Honorable Tikeleti, Honorable Matisa, can you round up your questions?
No, the point that I had skipped that I wanted to direct to the compensation fund is about the role that you play in ensuring that the employers contribute. I mean, we can give examples of the mine workers, the owners of the mines, the ones. I'm sure recently you have heard about this, and it's not only in respect of that. There are a number of other companies which are not following. Now, what is the role that you play in ensuring that that does happen? Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Tegeledi.
Technology.
Chairperson, on page 14 of the UIF, training of the unemployed, I think this covers workers who are at the risk of retrenchment as well. And we read almost every day from the media that economists themselves are not in agreement as to the duration of this economic meltdown. So it's worth it as people who are lay people in economics. This 40 million that is set aside for this project, how sure is the department that this amount will be sufficient to cover the period of the meltdown or the crisis, or maybe to be given you know, the duration of the spread of this 40 million that will cover this financial year or two, three financial years, or once off or something like that, I'm not sure. But given the statements from economists, one is you know, doubtful as to whether this amount is sufficient or what. And on progress, that is page 13 of the UNF again, that we have decreased 6.5 backlog to 1.2. It's really job well done. Taken from Member Nyakembe again, as to whether you have verified this information that you are given, that it has been reduced to 1.2, so that at the end of the day, there's a specific person who has to be held accountable, although we know that the buck stops with you. And just below that statement, that paragraph, we say we are going to appoint service providers or consultants, to my understanding. I think people who are working overtime are getting paid for that overtime. Would it be cost-effective to engage service providers when we have people who are working overtime? And on the master copy of the compensation fund, 3.2 under finance, that is page 26. That is further human resource loss resulting from voluntary seven packages. I would like to know if the department detailed exit interviews to find out what could be the causal factors for these voluntary packages. Because I think the department has spent a lot of money training these people over the years when they were working for the department. In other words, we had invested in them. And about the vacant post that I didn't see now, we want also to upload, because we thought we were being too ambitious when you were telling us that they will be filling in the post before December. However, one would assume that the remaining posts are reserved for women, as to, you know, the organogram is not actually balancing. We're not saying 50-50 this time, but we're saying women, I mean, there must be a visible number that they are there, that are being taken serious. And also welcome the CFO, and we think that she's going to do a stellar job and boost the image of the department. For now, that's the chair, sir.
So just before the commissioner replies to the answers, I omitted to mention. I appreciate the honesty, the openness, and the frankness that you always displayed when looking into these things, because I think that on its own, it's already a process of showing that, you know, I'm mindful that there are some challenges, and I'm prepared to work on that. So just as a comment, thank you for your honesty.
Over to you, department. Anyone? Like the UIF for compensation?
Thank you, Chairperson. Now I will start with the question from Honorable Madisha. The issue of 9.2 billion, Chairperson, it cannot be a problem, because it shows the efficiency of the organization in managing itself. The worst case scenario will be to have a deficit, which means you have to go to government to ask government to bail you out. Now, I also indicated that the surpluses that we have, Chairperson, give us the opportunity to improve benefits. I've indicated that the minister has already in his budget speech indicated that because of this good performance, he's actually improving the benefits from 8 months to 12 months. He's also going to improve the income replacement rate, Chairperson. But the problem that we have is the processes that you need to follow to do that. Hence, and even the minister himself has indicated that he wants to be empowered, to be given a regulation, so that every year when he sees that there's good performance, he can improve benefits without taking the long processes. If he does it, with the Minister of Finance, who can actually provide checks and balances in that regard, that will happen. So the bill is already in place to improve the benefits of the fund. And also, the 1.2 billion, Chairperson, that we mentioned is an indication that through these efficiencies, the fund is able to put money back into the economy by ensuring that we don't have unemployment, which I believe from where I'm sitting is quite something that is positive. The approval rate of 97%, Chairperson, is correct, but immediately after approval, then a payment is effected. On page 10 of our presentation, we also indicate that the total paid, which was that approval rate on that slide that the honorable member has mentioned, it's also indicated that we have paid 610,736 members. So that approval also has also been paid. Now, in terms of this process of helping the people who are in distress, we are working with the CCMA. I think the DG has actually mentioned that. We deal with the CCMA, we deal with the CITAS. We also have that governance structure where you find the Department of Labor, which will look at all these companies that will come to make an application for funding. One of the most important criteria is a company should be able to demonstrate that is unable to carry its wage bill, but also there can be possibilities of a turnaround in that particular company. So that is the criteria that you have. I think the announcement has been made that on the 21st of September, already the CCMA has opened its doors and some companies have started to go to make that application. So that is the process that has to be followed. I think there will be a media statement that will actually outline all those processes so that people are not confused as to the process that must be followed. Chairperson, the issue of the taxi industry also is, I need to indicate that why we are struggling in this sector is that there is what we call a sectorial determination where they were brought on board. I think it was around 2006. You can see that other workers, even the domestic sector, is actually complaining. So these guys have been brought late into this umbrella of sectoral determination. But I need to indicate that we have held talks with all the taxi associations. We mentioned the Santaco, we mentioned the National Taxi Alliance, where we talked about the strategies on how we can take this process further. And you are correct that also after the imbezos, actually, nothing actually happened. Because before you come with punitive measures, you need to really have a buy-in from all these people. But in terms of penalties, yes, we not only levy penalties, we also interest on the amount that is not paid. And if you look at our financial statement, in the annual report, we have some millions that we levy in terms of penalties and also the interest. The rate of a penalty is 10%, and in terms of the interest is the one that fluctuates and is determined by national the National Treasury. Now, the efforts that we have put in place, for instance, we have received the total database of associations, and that is working very closely with the Department of Transport. Now, we went through associations, Mr. Nyakemba, Honorable Member, that we also cover those guys who work as queue marshals and also those who are doing the cleaning in the industry. So we want to encompass everybody, because our law is simple, that everybody who works for a period of 24 hours a month or more must be covered by the fund. Now, you are correct. The issues of the training of the unemployed, at this point in time, it is done with MESITA. Other CETAs have not yet. It's a pilot process. Maybe I'll also deal with the issue of the money not being sufficient. This is a pilot process. We are just starting, wanted to test how efficient it can work. But I need to indicate that the 40 million was for this financial year only. The next financial year already, approval has been made of 200 million because we want to extend it to other provinces, Chairperson. So I think in a nutshell, those are the answers that I will then provide. Thanks.
Any follow-up questions from UIF?
Chairperson, I asked about the exit interviews just to find out as to why people are taking certain packages. Yeah.
Members, we are done with UIF. Okay. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. I think I want to admit the first issue, the 30 days issue. It's something that we will have to look at it again. But I think the indication is that this only applies to sundry creditors, those who are providing us with procurement services, rather than the doctors and service providers. In that area, we are still lacking seriously. I've indicated earlier on that it takes between 90 days and 4 years to pay invoicing, but that's something that we are addressing. With regard to the Siemens versus RMA system, I think the critical thing here is that Siemens had an opportunity in 2002 to improve the compensation systems. Unfortunately, what they did what we call the migration of the old ICL system into a new environment. So basically what they didn't do was they didn't change the processes. So they're still doing things the way they were done in the 50s. So I think that was the chance that was missed by the compensation fund. So what we are doing here is that we have decided, because we've got a DG who is very energetic, he wants to see delivery. We have decided, even before his appointment, that we cannot keep on complaining about Siemens. So what we've decided is to say, while Siemens is battling to sort itself out, we would like to take out that portion of the service which they must give us and give it to somebody else who can assist us in delivering, because we cannot afford to wait. So I think that was a decision we've taken, and we have communicated to Siemens that that portion of the work they can no longer provide, because we have already procured a system that is complete. What they're going to do is to start from scratch scoping the new system. And our challenge is that to scope a new system from scratch can take between 18 and 36 months. So we don't have that luxury anymore. So that is why we've decided to move ahead and adopt the RMA system, because it's there, it's working. We have seen it, we have tested it, we have broken it apart. We are quite happy that that is the solution that this fund must use. On the issue of turnover of internal auditors.
Siemens, are you saying that the system that was provided by Siemens did not work. Is that what you're saying?
Madam Chairperson, what happened in 2000 when we were developing the UIF system, CIA, we approached the compensating commissioner to say, take advantage of the new system. I took the team there to say, this is the new direction UIF is going. Come with us. So what they did when UIF was doing CIA, then they did SAFIGA. So they said, they're not going there. They've arrived. So what they did was to take the old system and put it on a new platform. But the system was not changed. They were still doing the same way they were processing claims in the 60s under the new Microsoft environment like you have today. But the basics of the systems never changed. So that's why we are where we are today. And I don't want to blame it on Siemens. It's the commissioner and his management team who didn't take the right decision. I think we must accept the blame in that regard. Unfortunately, last year in November, I gave Siemens the new specifications that I want them to implement. Came July this year, they were still looking for people because they were saying that they don't have the capacity and the resources. So my sense was that if I'm to wait for them to go and get people, I'll come here again next year saying that Siemens is a problem. So what I've decided with my management team was to say, DG, can you assist us to procure an external system? Because Rand Mutual is licensed by us. We own Rand Mutual. So what we're basically saying is that we have a system that is working that we can bring in tomorrow and can turn around this place. So let's embrace it. So what we're basically saying to Siemens, you are supposed to do this system. We have now procured it from outside. This portion of work which you're supposed to do, don't do it anymore. Let's get the savings from you for not doing this work. We'd rather move ahead with this new system. I think that's the approach that we have adopted. However, other systems that they're supposed to deliver, like the financial systems, and they'll still continue to deliver that because we're quite comfortable that they have the enough capacity to be able to deliver on those. But on the claim system, unfortunately, they will not. And it will take between now and 3 years if we're to sit down with them now and say, let's start. So unfortunately, we can't afford to do that. Because the service providers out there are not just sitting back and watching us. There are litigations coming. I'm getting letters of demand. So the issue is, if I'm to continue to go to court and try to defend this matter, the cost of litigation can be more than the cost of getting a new system. So the issue here is that we rather address the issue now and save on the cost and make sure that the workers get attention. If you go to private hospitals, just do yourself a favor. If you go check on their walls, there's a sign that says, if you are a workman's compensation case, pay cash. So I think that is not what we want to see happening. It's happening now. And that's why we're saying we can't wait. We have to remove those notice boards across the hospitals so that the workers can get service much faster, without them having to pay cash. That's what is happening at the present moment in time. We're trying to address that. With regard to the 400 million...
You wanted to chip in. DG, I heard what you're saying, but I'm very much concerned about this email. However, we'll give you... an opportunity to deal with them. I hear what the commissioner is saying. It's not a new system, but whatever they have done in that system, whether they have improved it, there is money involved. You are saying that last year, I don't know when, you came up with something new, but it did not work. That's money involved. There's no money involved. And eventually, you decided to say, no, you can't do it anymore. you have to use money outside. I'm very much concerned. Continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. What I was basically saying that we didn't pay Siemens to, what we have done, we have given them the new business processes that will make the compensation fund work better. Now, it was for them to take those processes and put them into a computer programming process. They have not done that. They were still looking for people all over the world. So what we decided was to say, we can't wait for you, look for them. By the time you find them, we'll have already resolved our problem. I think that's the approach that we have used. And also what we're saying, in the budget that they put aside for this system, we want that money from them. We can't pay them for not giving us a system. So that's the approach. The 400 million, Madam Chairperson, honorable members, I will definitely follow it up with your proposal that we must go to the radios and other things. The challenge that I had, I think in the last meeting I reported that I was recruiting a communications manager, which I said to the employer, countered my offer, and I've recountered, and I'm informed that she will start on the 1st of November. So we will be able to begin to address those issues and put these things in the media. But the 400 million, I want to believe that if indeed it was money that did not belong to people who are supposed to get it, I think the initiative was good in the sense that they saved us money. However, I must indicate that we will publicize. What I would also do is to try to identify that portion that is not for doctors or service providers and try to find those beneficiaries to see if they can come forward and get it. That is a commitment that I will do after today to try to locate the names of those workers who are supposed to get this money and see how we can trace them so that we can ensure that they get the money. With regard to...
Chairperson, I think the Commission is very vague in responding to that answer. It sounds very generic. Your response to the question is very generic. I will repeat. And I think the other speakers also actually reiterated the same thing. What we wanted to know is, am I correct if I surmise that of that 400 million that is presently in the coffins, it could have been, prior to this, that it could have been the was supposed to have been more than the 400 million. Am I correct if I surmise that the possibility of fraud and corruption is evident in that? I want you to answer that one.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I'm not denying that there could be elements of fraud in this particular case. Let me just indicate to you that one of the reasons why I immediately acted, we have FICA. FICA requires everyone of us to have a banking details so that we can be able to put your money in the bank so that we can account to who we've paid. Now, there was one of the travel agencies that the fund was using. And my risk manager came to me and said, I've picked up that it's a payment of 2 million rands by check to the service provider. And then I said, why should a service provider, a travel agent, be paid 2 million by check? Are they not supposed to have a bank account? So those are some of the things that we were trying to address when we said, let's stop all check payments. Let's identify the owners of these checks. Let's announce that we have now stopped paying by check, and those people who had money due to them through the check method, may they please come forward so that we can identify them and give them their money, so that we can get their banking details, put their money in their bank account. And that has not happened. Possibly, the 2 million that was going to travel agent, had we not stopped it, it might not have ended up with the travel agent. I'm saying yes, it's possible that there is fraud involved here. The fact that after 2 years, no one wants to come forward that indicates that something is not right. With regards to those employees who have taken severance packages, I would like to say that most of them have indicated the issue of representativity, that they want to enhance representativity in the fund. So most of them were white staff members who have left in order for them to enhance their representativity. Those were some of the reasons that they were given when we convened them to ask them what is the reason. Some of them, they had genuine reasons. They wanted to pay off their bonds because some were young and they believed that the money they could be able to speed up and pay their bonds and get employment elsewhere. So those are some of the reasons that people have. On the backlog, the service provider versus overtime. What basically we're saying is that Siemens is the one that is currently assisting us with the backlog. But because the current system was not helpful, we then have to use our own staff through overtime for them to be able to reduce the backlog. So it would be ideal that we get the system fixed so that we don't have to pay overtime. I must also indicate that we are using the service providers. I think the critical thing is that we should not look at the money that we are paying. Because if we do that, we may lose one important fact, is that how much money are we saving by bringing the service providers? I'll give an example that I would not have known, for example, of the 12 million that was being siphoned every day. I would not have known about it had I not engaged the service provider. Maybe I'll find more of it, and I'll find more people brought before the law enforcement agencies by using these service providers. But the critical thing is that in the contract that we enter with them is that you must transfer skills, right, that when you exit, we must be able to do those things ourselves. At the present moment, I did not have the capacity. I'm building the capacity. So in the short term, I need them for us to be able to comply with legislation, save the money, but at the same time, employ our own people who can then take over from them. For example, if you look at revenue, I'm talking about 4.5 billion. I'm saying potentially we should be collecting 6 billion. Not 4.5 billion. So there's 1.5 billion that is sitting out there that I'm not collecting. And it is through this assistance of these service providers, the remodeling that we are doing and all those things, that I'm hoping that I can be able to increase my reach and be able to collect the 6 billion. So we are monitoring these service providers very closely. KPMG's contract is 18 months. We believe that within 18 months, we should have been able to address all our problems and we should have been able to capacitate ourselves to be able to run without them. So that's the arrangement that we have. Similar to internal audit, if currently we do not have an internal audit function because we rely on the Department of Labor's internal audit function, which unfortunately was unable to perform internal audit. Currently, in order to comply, we have procured these services, but as I said earlier on, we are now in the process of headhunting to be able to capacitate ourselves. And one of the critical requirements is that once we have appointed, they must transfer skills to our own people who can take over after them. So these are some of the things that we are doing in the meantime. Madam Chairperson, you'll forgive me. I'm rushing through the answering. If there are things that I have not answered, I will be able to send back written replies to some of these questions that you have requested me. The taxi industry, compensation fund is not strong in that particular area. I must indicate that when I asked about it, I was given an indication that in terms of the legislation, if you are a sole trader, you are not deemed to be the employer. So most taxi owners are deemed to be sole traders. And I've requested our legal section to look into that because I do not believe that in today's time we still can talk of sole traders. because I believe most of these people are now running closed corporations who are taxi owners. So that's the challenge that we are having in the conversation. There's that gray area of whether it's a sole trader or it's a CC. Can I leave it at that, and the rest of the questions I'll hand in written responses against this call pass. Fine. Okay. I think on the issue of intensification of communication, I've indicated that this is an issue that I'll follow up, and probably at the next meeting when I come here, I'll be able to give you progress in that regard. With regard to the Government Gazette, I think it is the legal requirement that we must first do this process via the Government Gazette. I'm quite aware that it might not be accessible, but I've taken your advice, and I will definitely use other means of communication beyond this Government Gazette, and hopefully when I come back, I will be able to give a report in that regard. One other issue that I need to indicate to yourselves, you asked me how long will these KPMGs be there? Are they not labor brokers? I think I've understood that. Indeed, we could be playing in that area. There is a possibility that they could be labor broking because they might not have the capacity. They go and recruit whenever there is a job available. So probably it's something that we need to look into to avoid falling into trouble. But as I've indicated, we must also look at the cost versus the benefits. But I must also indicate to you that I've just picked up in one of the studies that these consultants have done for me. I've just asked them to look at the police. We have picked up that in the last 2 years, we have had a high number of police who have lost fingers. And that tells you something. Police losing fingers, is their work of a nature that they can lose fingers? So that also indicates something is not right. And it's something that is coming out of the data analytics that I'm getting from the service providers. But I need to follow up to check whether indeed those policemen do not have fingers. So, I've not yet got the number, but it's quite a number. It's over 200 policemen who have lost fingers, according to the data that we've picked up. The role we play, as I've indicated earlier on, I think Compensation Fund has been very weak on enforcing compliance to employers. I must say, if you look at the UIF numbers of employers, the commercial employers are talking about 600,000, and the compensation fund is around 400,000 employers. So if you compare the two, we have a deficiency of over 200,000 employers who are in the UIF system but are not on the compensation system. So this is something that also we need to look at and try to address. Representativity. Honourable members, I can assure you, if you look at this annual report compared with the previous years, you'll see that even UIF is not coming closer to me. The number of females at executive level, if I'm to add Ms. Puzi, who's not here, is almost getting to 50% of females at senior level. Madam Chairperson, thank you.
Honorable Tikeleti and Long.
Chairperson, let me follow up. I think the explanation on service providers is adequate because the main concern was about the cost effectiveness of the process. But on the other hand, I think we need to be realistic. We have heard about the transfer skills by service providers, but you know that they won't transfer their skills to the optimal because they'll be doing that at their own peril, actually. They'll always make sure that there's a high demand for them. We always call them. So I think it's important for us to train our own staff and rely on them, invest in them.
Honorable Law.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we are mindful of the fact that the Commissioner is having a very complicated, or rather a difficult task in order to do his job. But surely there are certain contingency plans that needs to be put into place here, and I fail to understand that with all these challenges, it doesn't seem to me as if we're making much progress. One of the things that I didn't hear the Commission in mentioning, and I've asked that, and I will repeat that question again. It briefly touched on the service providers with skills transfer, the Alexander Forbes, the Deloitte and Touches, etc., etc. Safe to say, a CFO has been appointed. So surely next year this time, that faction that the CFO is accountable for would be taken in her responsibility and not be outsourced anymore. We can't pay money to somebody here and having somebody here on board. I mean, I think that is also a very evident phenomenon in many government services. You appoint somebody, but you bring in a consultant to do the job. I want to know, in terms of monetary value, rand and cent, these service providers, I hear what you say, that if these people were not there, presently you are collecting in the region of 4.6 billion. There is that possibility of getting it up to 6 billion. That is what you're surmising to. Thanks for that optimism. However, what is it that you're spending in terms of these service providers, rand and cent? Can you tell us that, please?
I do not have the figures offhand, but I can be able to supply them once I've gone back.
We have come to the end of the discussions of today. There are three areas, DG, that I want to highlight to you. We've raised these concerns before. We are hoping that it will be the last time that we're raising the concerns. The first one. You see, I hear what the Commissioner is saying about the usage of this service, so-called service providers, the consultants. There are people who are employed who are getting salary at the end of the day who are supposed to be doing this job. And all these people that have been employed, I mean, been told that the best have been selected. But at the end of the day, this is what you get, consultants. And it's money, the money that you pay to these consultants, it's, I don't know, it's five times more than the money that you are paying to this person. So why is the Department of Labor so tolerant with people who are not performing? Because, you see, last time when you were here, we didn't hear much about the, you know, the, you told us that you're going to speed up things, which is fine, you've done some of these things. But the problem now, this thing comes back to us because they're introducing these service providers. So we are not happy. We don't want to hear any more service providers that are going to be employed in the Department of Labor. If that has to happen, I think the minister must be involved. We must also be consulted. And the nature of the contracts that you are getting into are contracts that are very complex, very difficult for you to get out of them. Now, you find yourself having to hire service providers for the work that was supposed to be done by service providers. So, really, all these contracts must come to an end. And I think we have to talk to the minister and see how do we deal with this thing. I hear that it's difficult to get out. How much have we spent on these people? And how much more are we going to spend on these people for work that they are not doing? And I think the staff, the people who are employed in these positions, it's high time that you tell us whether, I think the Department of Labor, it's high time they tell us they prefer to use consultants than employing people. The second issue, I know that I also commend you that you, from the very beginning that we met with you, all the problems, I mean, we really went for you in terms of questions, and because your presentations have been very honest, and because of that honesty, which is good, you had to face the music, and you're still doing it. But there's a lot that needs to be done in that department. There must be a special attention that is paid to this compensation fund. UIF is the third one. There are a number of issues that you must focus on, but this one, these three, for me, we have to deal with them as soon as possible. I will appreciate if you can give us a list of all these service providers by end of next week in the department, end of next week, all the service providers, when they started, the nature of the contract, where have they been used, and for how long are they going to be there? I've been told, I'm still keeping it. I couldn't find it in my notes, but I know that with Deloitte and Touche, you said that they are ending in August next year. That's what you told us. It's next year, August. When is 18 months? It
can't be October. It's before October.
This year. But the sooner we understand the nature of all these contracts, and really, we mean it. If we say we don't want to hear about service providers, I think you must have headhunt people and fire those who are not working and headhunt people. Because we don't have this money to pay to these people. This is waste of taxpayers' money. We spoke with the department the first day they appear in front of us, that it is not going to be business as usual. Unfortunately, we can't adopt the style of work of other people. We also have our own targets, and our target is 5 years. So we can't be here in 5 years' time, and people who come after us and ask, what were they doing? Where are they with what? That's why also in terms of legislation, we have a deadline, so that the legislation that we'll amend, we must see that they are working. We don't amend legislation towards the end of the year and leave it to other people to see whether it works or not working. So the sooner we understand that we really want to make an impact on the lives of the poor of this country as the Department of Labor, the better. And those who are not doing their job, teaching, the heads must roll. No more of the service providers. The heads must roll. People must account. So with those few words, I thank you for all the presentations that you've made to us and information that you have given to us, the new and the old. But I think we'll be calling you very soon to check on certain issues. What is that? Where are you? I believe that when you have a plan, if you have a plan, you can have a plan that says, by the end of the month, I would have been through with this plan. Your plan goes in stages. You have your short term and your medium term. And in the process of executing that plan, you are able to see that I will not make it, and where should I change? So the plan that says I'll be done by 30th March, you know, it's just straight. I don't. That's not what we want. We're not going to be impressed because you told us it's going to by 30th of November, 30th of December, this would have been done. We want to know how you are going to do it so that we can see that you have tried, your plan is working. You also see yourself, you judge yourself if this plan is working or not working, so that before the end of that 2 years or 3 years, you would have changed your tactics towards fulfillment of your final objective. I know these things are not easy. It's not easy for us either. But we must make a mark. And that mark is the difference in the lives of people of South Africa, in particular the workers, because we are dealing with the workers. And those are the most vulnerable people. We have to be firm. We have to take very hard decisions. You can't be a leader if you can't take a hard decision. All the decisions that you take, they can't be nice. Then if you want to take nice decisions, you will go nowhere. Thank you once more for appearing.